Hey, it's Tony Bruschi, and this is our Week in Review. Over the weekend, taking a look back at some of the most compelling conversations and stories that we've covered for you of the last week. Brand new episodes back Monday morning, bright and early, 5 a.m. here on the podcast.
This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi.
Featuring defense attorney, Hidden Killers daily contributor, and host of the Defense Diaries podcast, Bob Motta.
New documents being filed in the Delphi murder case, and some of the most disturbing that I think I've seen and that I know many people have ever seen. Bob, what is going on here in what they are revealing in this already very disturbing case?
Tony, I have to tell you, man, this filing, which dropped at like 2:08 in the morning, I want to say Wednesday morning going, so it would have been technically Thursday morning, absolutely blew my mind.
Yeah.
I've been practicing law for a long time, Tony, and I've never seen anything like this. So let me back up just a bit. Essentially, what happened is they filed what's called a motion for a Franks hearing.
Okay. Uh-huh.
Now, a Franks hearing in lay people terms is essentially where the defense is coming in and they're saying, okay, in order to get a warrant, law enforcement came in and lied to the judge in order to secure the warrant. Okay. Mm-hmm. So that's just a very like generic, but very accurate definition of what a Franks hearing is. And what they do is they tell the judge, because they lied to get the warrant, we're seeking that you suppress everything that was found in that warrant as fruit of the poisonous tree. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what they file. Right. And like that motion comes and I read it and I'm like, well, you know, they're okay. You know, I mean, they're not. And with a Franks hearing, they have to come with specificity. You have to come with receipts.
Okay.
You cannot just come in and say, oh, law enforcement's, you know, lying because we think they are. You have to come in with some kind of proof. And boy, oh boy, they then filed a 136 page memorandum. Yeah, you heard that right. And this isn't with the attachments. This is 136 pages of written memorandum. So, and there's a lot, there are two very split sides on this. And me as a defense attorney, I appreciate what they were trying to do. But when you dig into the document and the whole thing, as soon as you read the first paragraph,
mm-hmm.
you know what it's all about.
Oh my
God.
They're
basically saying that Richard Allen is not just presumed innocent, but he's actually innocent. And that it's a group of Odinists. Now, if I was not familiar, I mean, I knew Odin was like the Norse god from watching Vikings on History Channel, that show. And, you know, but I didn't know that it was like a religion or like, I don't know if you called it. I mean, technically it is a religion because it's Norse Viking religion. It's what they believed. You know, they believed that Valhalla was the equivalent of heaven. Odin is God. You know, they had the equivalent of, you know, the devil. So I was not aware that it was practiced with any kind of, you know, frequency in the United States. So what they're alleging is that the girls, Abby and Libby, who were killed back on the 13th of February, 2017, the case went cold for 5 years. Last year, October, they arrested a guy named Richard Allen.
Yeah.
Okay. So he's been in custody for 10 months. So fast forward, there's been a few hearings on it. There was a hearing back in, I can't never remember the date. It was either July or maybe June, maybe July. I can't remember, but I was there. Mm-hmm. I was there in person. And they trot this guy out. He's got the 1,000-mile stare, blank stare. He looks like he is just like either he's been tranquilized or he's just lost his mind being in solitary 23 hours a day. On top of that, the guy's like 5'4". Like when I first saw him, I was like stunned at how little he was.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So fast forward to this week. And they've come forward and they've said that they believe that a group of Odinists are the parties responsible for killing the girls. And they go into great detail about the crime scene. So this is the first, and this thing is filed unsealed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so, and just so you know, I originally got because I'm very involved with that case. So as soon as I heard from somebody at like 3 a.m, they're like, oh, they filed. As soon as the Carroll County's clerk's office opened, I hit them up because I talked to them and I asked, hey, can you send me the documents? And she did. The clerk sent them to me. Within 2 hours, the judge sealed it.
Okay.
All right. So like it's sealed. Okay. Mm-hmm. So the thing is incredible in terms of what it's suggesting. It's so incredible that people are wanting, oh yeah, Odinists. Oh yeah, a bunch of Viking. Yeah. When you get into the facts of it in terms of the crime scene and in the way that the girls were staged and they're alleging, and these are allegations, but they're allegations based on the discovery that has been tendered to them by the state.
Yeah.
You understand? These aren't allegations made up out of whole cloth. These aren't theories. They're taken directly from police reports that were tendered to the defense. They're taken from sworn affidavits from other cops that weren't a part of the unified command, which was the task force that was investigating the crimes. Mm-hmm. And it comes from depositions that they've taken of sheriffs and cops and people that were involved with the unified command. Okay. And what they're suggesting is that the unified command did like a left turn, like within 3 weeks of finding the girls, looking at the crime scene, seeing the ritualistic nature of it, and decided that they weren't going to pursue that avenue. Okay.
Okay.
So the defense is saying, man, and so then they start dropping the receipts. Now, the filing, and there's so much, we could probably spend like 4 hours on it, but as you know, I'm at Crime Con.
Yeah.
So, which I was hoping you were going to be here, but next year, man, next year. It's unbelievable. Okay. So they start with giving like an introduction. Okay. Mm-hmm. And it's about 25 pages long, and they break it down and they start with the fact that once law enforcement got to the crime scene, found the girls, horrific crime scene.
Yeah.
But they noticed all these like sticks and branches that were placed in a certain type of way, not as if they were just tossed on them to hide them, because there wasn't enough sticks to like hide the girls. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they're looking at it and they're like, wow, this is weird. And then they see that in a tree off in the distance, there's written in blood, and then they swabbed it and it turned out to be, I can't remember offhand, but it's either, I think it's Abby's blood.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And there looks to be what they call a rune, R-U-N-E, and it looks like the letter F. Okay. So they then allegedly go to Purdue University, because Delphi's in Indiana. Okay. Mm-hmm. And they try to find a professor that is into, you know, like cults, ritualistic type things. They claim that they go to this guy, and this guy looks at these photographs or sketches and determines, I don't think the killings were ritualistic in nature. So this is what law enforcement is claiming that happened.
Yeah.
And so that is what they're saying. That's why they're saying they abandon that line of the investigation.
Sure.
So the defense then tries to go find this professor, because there's no documentation in the police reports at all of who this professor is, what his name is, any report, nothing. So they go to Purdue and they can't find anybody. So it's like a mystery.
Yeah.
So then they depose Tony Liggett, who was the sheriff and he was a detective at the time. And they say, oh, okay, well, who was this guy? And he's like, I don't know. I can't remember his name. So right now we have a professor that may not even actually exist, claiming that, you know, that's why they abandoned this investigation. So then they start digging in and stuck. They call it the needle in the haystack in the actual memo.
Yeah.
They start finding these various reports of different people, and they end up naming four individuals that are known Odinists.
Yeah.
And that's what they call them. And they come with receipts. They have all their social media posts.
Yeah.
They have just a huge amount of information about these guys. And they basically, but like, so that's like 100 pages of the document is going through what's essentially going to be, I anticipate, their alternate suspect defense.
Yeah.
So they took the opportunity, which this is what a lot of people are upset about, to number one, basically put their defense out there under the guise of a Frank's motion. Because remember, the Frank's motion is basically Tony Leggett lied, the detective that went in and got the affidavit for the search warrant of Richard Allen's house. We're not dealing with probable cause affidavit for the arrest. We're dealing with the search of his house. That's significant because that's when they found the gun. Because if you know anything about the case, they claim that they had found an unspent 40 caliber in between the girls, like kind of buried a little bit between the girls. So that they had that thing. Wasn't shot, wasn't fired, it was unspent. So then when they do the search of this guy's house, Richard Allen's house, they find that he has a 40 caliber Sig Sauer weapon. So they then sent it off to a lab and they're claiming that they could do tool markings in order to determine that particular unspent casing, which was ejected. It didn't go through the barrel, belonged to or was ejected from the gun that Richard Allen owns. So it's a huge piece of evidence.
For them. Huge.
You're consuming the Hidden Killers podcast.
Want more? Start binging on all of our true crime podcasts right now through Apple Podcasts and get an ad-free experience when you sign up to be a True Crime Today Premium Plus member exclusively on Apple Podcasts.
More of the Hidden Killers podcast, dropping soon.
Press subscribe now.